JC Corcoran Podcast.
Hi, I'm Cindy, Time Life Operator. Steve's going to tell you all about our new Valentine's Day offer, then I'll be back to take your order. See you soon!
Thanks, Cindy. Yes, Valentine's Day is here, and couples in love are everywhere, which can be hard if you're single. So for those of you who don't have a special loved one this year, Time Life is offering a video collection of all those amazing arguments you'll be missing. The first video collection contains 10 fights, like these.
Oh, for sake, this is Valentine's Day. A toaster doesn't say I love you, it says make me toast. Wait, let me get this straight. You're saying you want to blow our nest egg on a boob job for me? Hey, well, 10 years ago, I didn't know you'd weigh 290 pounds. I'd rather f*** the dog. What do you mean maybe OJ had the right idea? And this Valentine's Day favorite, pop the cork.
You want some more Mountain Dew?
I thought you were bringing home peach champagne.
Well, they're out.
You know, 10 years ago on Valentine's Day, you would have been licking champagne off my body.
That's it. Yes, I'm leaving.
Yes, you'll get many great arguments like, look, are you going to sit there and tell me you never flirt? You shake your ass when you walk past a coffin. Baby, all I said is your sister's hot. Not that I wanted to sleep with her. She's not my type. She's thin. No, you're not fat. I'm just, you know, just shoot me in the head. You say your mother cooks better than I do. Your mother cleans better than I do. Well, you know what? Your mother can jump up my man. And this one, keeping up with the Joneses.
No. I told you, you don't get any until after I get my new furniture, okay? Besides, you're always too tired anyway.
Well, it's because I'm working 3 jobs. Maybe I could quit one?
I am not going to live like a hillbilly.
That's it. This, I'm leaving.
And for an additional $10.95, you'll also get the gay lovers version, containing some all-time greats, like, hey, do you want me to go back and take a picture of that guy's ass? It'll last longer. Troy, all I said is that your brother's hot. Not that I wanted to sleep with him. He's not my type. He's thin. No, you're not fat. I'm just, you know, just shoot me in the head. And the gay classic, Premature Eruption.
Hey, I didn't know I was supposed to buy you flowers. I've made you veal, your favorite. You don't appreciate me.
That's it. This. I'm leaving.
Here's Cindy to tell you more.
Call the number at the bottom of the screen. I'll be standing by to take your order.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Thursday, February 10th, 2022, 273 days remaining in our American democratic system. As we have noted, hi, it's JC here at JCOnTheLine.com. We say here, I say here, that we only do politics when it is unavoidable, but I think it's going to be unavoidable here today. We'll get into that in just a little while. It does not take much to make the crazies come out. Within moments of the announcement yesterday that Bob Saget died of head trauma, the idiots came out. Well, it sounds pretty fishy to me. Oh, of course it does, because you were in on the autopsy and you trained for 8 years in medical school and you are, after all, a coroner, right? No to all questions. Well, it sounds a little fishy. Yeah, well, talk to Sonny Bono. Talk to Liam Neeson's wife, actress Natasha Richardson. Oh, that's right, you can't, because they died of head trauma. You know, plus he's traveling and he's staying in a hotel that he's unfamiliar with. And, fairly tall guy, can bump your head on things. Well, it sounds pretty fishy to me. But you know, the whole Bob Saget thing has a history of bringing out the idiots. Because remember when they said they're immediately doing an autopsy and people, yeah, celebrity autopsy there. See, if I die or somebody in my family dies, I have to wait 4 to 6 weeks for the autopsy. But because he's a movie star, TV star, comedian, he gets the autopsy right away. And it's like, you idiots. You idiots. An autopsy is always done as soon as possible after the body is found. It is the results of the autopsy that generally take about 4 to 6 weeks. And so what do we have here? The same thing that happens to every cadaver. Boy, do I hate that word, by the way. But it's the same thing. You die, they do the autopsy right away. It is the results that take 4 to 6 weeks. And this one took also about a month. Oh, you know, and I'm back on Facebook now. I was off for a month in jail because a guy had posted something saying that the coronavirus, what you should do is you should just go out of your way to contract the coronavirus, get the virus, get through it, and then you have the best possible immunity. Well, there's two things wrong with that. Number one, first of all, you don't get the best possible immunity. That's something, misinformation that was spread on the internet a long time ago. The best immunity you get is from the vaccine, and particularly from the booster shot. So the second half of the lie was that there was some sort of benefit in contracting the coronavirus. And I told the guy he was stupid for saying that, and I ended up in jail for a month. So apparently Facebook more interested in calling me a bully, more interested in that than the guy who was out there spreading the misinformation that could get you sick and possibly kill you. Okay, I guess that makes sense to somebody at Facebook. You know, the other problem is that they, the algorithms on Facebook have no ability whatsoever to analyze things like sarcasm. I got thrown in Facebook jail, it was like a year or so ago. Two very good friends of mine posted pictures in this of both women and just looking absolutely fantastic. I mean, they looked so good in this picture. And of course, my comment was something like, too bad you guys are so ugly and photographed so poorly. Clear attempt on my part to be, I don't know, sarcastic, facetious, whatever you want to call it. And I'm thrown in jail for a month for bullying. And this pencil-necked geek, this bug-eyed freak, Mark Zuckerberg, who started Facebook when he was in college for the purpose of rating women. That's right, God's gift to the female race. Brad Pitt lookalike Mark Zuckerberg is going to sit there and go, I think her butt's too big. Right, right. And then you talk about you violated community standards. You know, again, this bug-eyed freak who's never set foot in St. Louis in his life is going to tell me, somebody who spent 3.5 decades in St. Louis, going to preach to me about what the community standards are. It's a fucking joke. So my involvement with Facebook is going to change here very, very soon, and I'll explain all that somewhere down the line. Jeremy Giambi, what was he, something like 45, 47? Now, immediately, people are like, oh, you know, the steroids, that'll get you, the steroids, that'll get you. Well, it may turn out to be the case that it is related to his alleged use of steroids, runs in their family. You know, both Giambi guys, Jeremy and Jason, showed up in the Mitchell report a couple of years back when they did the big expose about the steroids and brought him in to do the giant background study. But we don't know that yet. It may turn out to be the case, you know, after they do the autopsy and we get the results, you know, it may turn out to be the case. But to stand there and tell somebody now that that's what happened, how do you know? I mean, this happens all the time. Talk to the police, talk to coroners, talk to investigators, detectives, whatever the case may be. If a body shows up at the bottom of the stairs and the guy's dead, it's really easy for the police to walk in and somebody to just go, well, he fell down the stairs, it killed him. But then they do the autopsy, and 4 to 6 weeks later, they find out that there's something like antifreeze in his system and that his wife had been slowly attempting to kill him for the last year. That's the difference between somebody who knows what the fuck they're talking about and somebody who doesn't and just starts chirping on the internet. Why do I bother? Why do I bother? Just when you think Marjorie Taylor Greene has said the stupidest thing that you can think of, she comes along. Yes, comes along yesterday. Here's a Kimmel from last night.
Exhibit A tonight is House member Marjorie Taylor Greene. Klan mom was busy defending the stormtroopers on OAN. And while she was at it, took some time to make a rather outlandish claim about Nancy Pelosi.
So everything is completely out of control. Not only do we have the D.C. jail, which is the D.C. gulag, but now we have Nancy Pelosi's gazpacho police.
That's right. If you got cold soup, you better watch it, because Nancy Pelosi's coming for it. These must be the soup Nazis Seinfeld warned us about so many years. And if the gazpacho police get hold of you, they'll throw you right in the goulash. So be very careful. There are a lot of characters on this team, Trump. Many of them are still trying to undo the election. Trump's new spokesmonster is a woman named Liz Harrington, who told Steve Bannon, we're going to be hearing about this for a long time.
The main point right now is this is not going away, and it's never going to go away until we get the correct result and fix our elections. I mean, it's just that simple.
Yeah, that's what the lady at the Supercuts told you when she cut those bangs. This is not... She's trying to say is, in the year 2030, when Donald Trump is 83, he's still going to be screaming about this. He's Don Quixote fighting windmills, which is something he's also done. He fought windmills. Meanwhile, the Biden administration spent the day shooting down a new imaginary menace that conservatives are frothing about. The White House had to debunk a widely circulated story from a right-wing website that said the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is giving free pipes to crackheads. They are not doing that, but that hasn't stopped people like Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas from sounding the alarm.
I got two words for America today. Crack pipes.
I don't know. Sometimes you just have to laugh. And so now what? So my friend C. Lynn McDowell said last night, longtime friend of mine, so I guess what? Now we have to start banning cookbooks. Pretty good line. But I am going to tell you something. I really sense that finally something might be happening, and here's why. Did you hear Mitch McConnell yesterday? Mitch McConnell just basically said, Trump people are making all this shit up. None of it's true. Next question. That's Mitch McConnell. And Kevin McCarthy was practically running through the Capitol halls the other day when reporters were trying to ask him questions about Trump. And this is behavior that suggests to me, based on things that I've seen in the past, that people are starting to try to put a little distance between themselves and Cheeto McTweeto himself. They must sense, and this is my guess, but I think it's an educated guess. This is my guess that it's starting to leak out that the January 6th investigative committee is starting to pick up really, really explosive stuff against Trump and his family and his cabinet and everything like that. And the politicians, the Republican politicians, are starting to hear about this and they're figuring, you know what? I'm going to start pulling away here. Let's put some distance between me and Captain Bonespurs. Let's just see if I turn out to be right. Good news for St. Louis Blues fans. Craig Berube gets a new 3-year contract. That is huge, not only for the team, not only for the franchise, not only for the fans, but for Craig Berube. You know, from the time these kids are, 10 years old up in Canada, and especially if you know anything about Berube's story, that's why they call him the chief and everything like that. I mean, it was a meager existence, and, he had a fight. A lot of people grow up in environments where they're like, okay, my main goal in life is to get the hell out of here. And from the time these young kids, these really talented kids in hockey, are 10 years old, they're just driven. They are driven. They are self-driven. They're driven by their families. They're driven by the system. And you're playing, and then you're fighting, and then you get your face stitched up, and then you get traded a couple of times, and you're leading this sort of nomadic lifestyle. And then the next thing you know, you're a coach, and everybody is calling you an idiot. Then you win a Stanley Cup. Then you come back next season. You lose a couple of games, and everybody's calling for your head on a platter, especially the hockey crowd. They're just awful when it comes to stuff like that. He's got to go home, and his wife's waiting for him. Honey, are you going to get fired? really hard to put down any roots. It's very similar to radio, if you want to know something. And then, you know, you hit it big, though. You hit it big. And people go, no, this guy is really something special. This guy is something special. We like him. We like the results he's getting. We like just what he's doing with the franchise, the respect that he seems to be getting not only around the league, but from his very own players. Now, maybe you can buy a house. Not that he was, you know, not that he was living at Brentwood Forest in a, you know, one bedroom condo, but you know what I mean. The guy can, you know, buy some green fucking bananas, for God's sakes. Really proud of the Blues organization and, you know, good for the Chief. Good for the Chief. My microphone seems to be clipping words here today. I will take a look at this after the podcast today and see if we can get that fixed by tomorrow. If I start talking about my experience yesterday at Costco, we're going to be here until 11 o'clock this morning. I'm going to have to let this sit for a day before I start talking about this. How about these kids 350 feet out on Creve Coeur Lake? You know, a couple of teenagers and the luckiest guys in the world. And I know I'm violating my own rule here. It started when a friend of mine had a tree crash into his house, and so he's on the news and he's standing there in front of the house and you see this giant tree which took out one corner of the house and basically sheared off an upstairs bedroom, and he was standing there and they ask him all the questions and goes, well, I feel real lucky. And I always have said, no, I don't think you should feel lucky. I think the guy who lives next door to you who does not have a tree in his house should feel lucky. As a matter of fact, if anything, you're incredibly unlucky because you're the only person in the neighborhood who's got a tree in their upstairs bedroom. But anyhow, these teenagers are out there on the lake and the ice crashes through and they're in the water and it's cold, and a rescue team just happened to be just down the road a little bit doing exercises and drills for safety and recovery practice. They're practicing the very thing that they have to spring into action on, and they come running down the road and 350 feet. That's almost the distance from home plate to the center field wall. They were really, really out there, and now they said the one kid had hypothermia to the fact that his body wasn't responding anymore. He couldn't move his arms and legs and stuff like that. So he was about to go under. He was about to buy the farm. What a tragic story that would have been. And they both got rescued and saved. Something to be said for being in the right place at the right time. Speaking of hockey, and we just were a little while ago, in 2010, on this date, I got a call from, and I'm not going to say any of the names. your secret is safe with me, guys. I got a call. Let's just say I got a call from the Blues organization. And they said, do you know we're doing this roast of Kelly Chase up here at Westport in a couple of nights? And we got Dave Coulier from Full House who's coming in. And he's going to be one of the roasters of Kelly Chase. These guys have known each other for a long time. Now, we have written this comedy routine, and it's a two-spot. Two-spot just basically means it could be anything from like the Smothers Brothers to Laurel and Hardy to Key and Peele. It's when you have two people up there and they're doing a comedy routine. Sonny and Cher, whatever you want to use as your reference point here. And we need somebody to come out and act as though they are a perhaps slightly head traumatized former hockey player and friend of Kelly Chase. Would you be interested in doing this? I'm like, sure, why not? It'll make a great story if nothing else. So I show up there that night, and this is a huge banquet. It must have been 700-800 people. I mean, it was a lot. Mark Grace, formerly Chicago Cubs, good friend of Kelly Chase, was up there on the dais. A lot of other, you know, names that you would recognize from the hockey world and the sports world are up there on the dais. And Grace was telling really funny stories, but almost everybody up there was sort of a little dull. They just were making big, long, drawn-out speeches. And you could see the guys in the crowd were almost in some cases trying to stay awake. Everybody had been drinking for quite some time. You know, they'd already been fed, It's getting a little late. Speeches are getting a little longer and more drawn out. You know what happens when people drink and then get a microphone in their hands? You've seen that before. You just tell the guy, go up there and give away the fucking holiday turkey to the winner of the raffle and then get off the fucking stage. You know, but somebody's been drinking since 4 p.m, gets up there to 10 o'clock at night. You try getting them off the stage. It's actually pretty funny sometimes. I did a thing with Don King once at a Cardinals banquet at the Renaissance Hotel downtown. And this was a benefit for multiple sclerosis. And by the time Don King was finished with his speech, he was raising money for muscular triopathy or whatever he said that night. I have no idea. So it's finally time for this bit, and I didn't even have a chance to rehearse it with Dave Coulier. Dave had been on the show with us earlier in the day, but I got the script later in that day, and so we had no chance to rehearse this thing. And all Coulier knows about me is that I was the host of a show I was doing with Trish Gazelle at the time on KTRS, and so that's all he knows of me. So I go up there on stage. I put a jersey on and a helmet sort of on sideways, a little cockeyed. You know, again, I'm supposed to be cranially challenged. Okay, let's put it that way. So get up there. This script that they wrote was the filthiest thing I've ever seen on paper, I think, in my life. It was basically Coulier setting me up and then me calling Kelly Chase the most awful, horrible names, describing scatological scenarios that could never happen, but painted a very, very vivid picture in people's minds. The audience is on the floor. These guys think this is the funniest thing they've ever heard. This guttural, scatological, absolutely disgusting on every level jokes. They're eating it up. We finished the bit. Standing ovation. The guys are all roaring laughing. Coulier gives me this little wink like, that was fucking awesome. And I walk off the stage. Now, I know this thing has been videotaped, and so I ask for a copy of the tape. Not necessarily to do anything with it, but to just have it for posterity's sake. You know, here I am on stage in front of 700-800 people, along with a nationally known comedian and performer. It would be something you'd like to have in your archives, if nothing else. And all of my requests for a copy. All of my requests for a copy of the tape were rejected. It was clear that the blues organization or the hockey world did not want this leaving that room that night. Oh, my God. That was on this date in 2010. 1991, on this date, I was in New Orleans talking to John Goodman about a movie he made called King Ralph. That's when things were really just starting to get rolling for John. And on this date, 1989, we departed for London, England at 5:25 in the afternoon, arrived the next morning at 7:35 a.m., something like a 12-hour flight. And it was for the silver anniversary of the Beatles coming to America for the very first time. We did a week of shows from the Abbey Road Studios right there. Got to walk around inside the place and everything. It was absolutely one of the most memorable moments of my life. It was almost sensory overload because there was that one studio that the Beatles worked in. You know, the Abbey Road Studios, this is a state-of-the-art recording facility. I mean, there's all sorts of people, big, huge names. Somebody who I just saw in concert last week, the Alan Parsons Project. Alan Parsons, who actually produced for the Beatles some of their stuff. You know, he had worked in there. Obviously, Paul McCartney has recorded in there. I'm talking about separate from the Beatles. So this is a state-of-the-art digital place. It's huge, okay? But when you walk in, there's just one studio, just one of the many, many studios in there that the people who run the Abbey Road Studios decided to just leave untouched. And that was the studio that you see in all of the Beatles films where you see Sir George Martin sitting up one floor looking down onto the main floor where the boys are playing. I still remember that the drapes were filled with seaweed. That was the available technology at the time for acoustic purposes. And we're walking around in there. This studio had been untouched since the 1960s when the Beatles recorded all of their memorable stuff. in there, and we're just walking around inside the place.
We are live from the studios of Abbey Road in London, England, and it is something else as we are sitting here in Studio 2 looking down at a floor, which we have seen in pictures and in film many times. It's empty now. There are chairs set out. There are microphones set up. But as we look down there right now, you look and you remember seeing the pictures and the films of the Beatles performing in that very studio. It's empty right now. But if you look long and you look hard, I would go so far as to say eerie. It really is. And the technicians and the people who are helping us out here at Abbey Road Studios, they come to work here every day. Many of these guys have been coming in here, you know, in and out of here for 20-some-odd years, and this is where they work. This is not really a big deal for them, but for us, we are numb. We heard about a gal who is one of the Apple Scruffs that George Harrison wrote about. I guess we haven't, we're going to have to go back and look at the movie again, but I guess in the John Lennon movie Imagine, you will see this gal, and if I'm not mistaken, somebody told me your hair is like blonde and all the way down to like your butt. Is that right, Jill?
No, it's dark and all the way down.
This is Jill Pritchard. She works at the Abbey Road Studios now. She's been here for 10 years, but it was 20 years ago that you were one of those gals who used to hang out at the back door and wait for the boys to come in and come out. Tell us what that was. First of all, did you have a job? How old were you? What was going on in your life?
18, 19. No, I didn't have a job.
So you just basically had nothing better to do than hang out here anyhow. The story that we hear is that you were one of the ones that was here like literally every day. And there were, how many girls used to kind of maintain this vigil out there?
At least a dozen that were there all the time.
Did you, in fact, get to talk to the guys once in a while? Or were they just fleeting glimpses coming in?
No, we talked to them every day when they came in and when they went out. I mean, they treated us as friends. I mean, they would come out and sit in the car park sometimes and talk to us. They'd come out on the steps.
Who did you like best back in those days? Paul?
Yeah.
And is it just because he spent more time with you or what?
No, not particularly, because in one way, John spent a lot of time with us. He was really great, John.
Now, what did you guys talk about? Did you talk about music or did you just talk about what was going on in the world?
Anything. We asked what they were doing. They'd tell us, you know, the weather, you name it. They'd talk about it. If they felt in a bad mood, they'd come in and grunt instead of saying hello. You know, I mean, it was just...
You were the guy who did the very first engineering job on a great George Harrison track, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and tell us how it was originally cut, because it probably didn't sound like what it sounds like on the album.
No, it certainly didn't. George had this idea of the song, and he wanted to play it to the other members of the band, and so he asked me to take him down to Studio One. They were working up here in Studio Two at the time, and record the demo of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And we went down there, and he got out his acoustic guitar and did a very slow tempo number, which I thought was really fabulous. It was just him, guitar and voice. It's a really beautiful song.
And it's, at some point, though, it got changed.
It got changed out of all recognition. The version that you hear on the final album is an up-tempo version with a lot more overdubs, electric guitars. And in my imagination, I don't think it was... It didn't finish up as good as the original demo.
Tell us about, there were very strict rules around the Abbey Road Studios before the Beatles got here, right down to how late at night things could be recorded, right down to what equipment would be available. And tell us that story about the multi-track.
Well, I mean, the session times were very strictly regimented. Each session lasted exactly 3 hours. You work 10 till 1 in the morning, and then 2:30 till 5:30 in the afternoon, and then 7 till 10 at night. And for a session to go on beyond 10 o'clock at night was very unusual. But the Beatles felt that they were at their most creative during the night period. And so the rule went out of the window. And soon it became the norm that everybody who wanted to be creative could work any hours they wanted to.
We're very, very honored to be joined at this time by Cynthia Lennon. We even remember when the boys came to America, and this is 1964, and they were talking about how maybe they would like to, you know, just make enough money. I remember Ringo said he wanted to just make enough money to maybe open a hair salon. So from your perspective, when you're thinking about it back when you had first met John and he was playing his guitar and obviously thinking about getting a band together and doing all this stuff, did it ever at any point occur to you that maybe this might turn into something that it turned into?
No. There were dreams, obviously. Not necessarily my dreams, but John's dreams of being a success and a wealthy man and a big star. But, I mean, those are the dreams of a young student and a young man. No, it was a complete surprise. Although their music was so wonderful, and when they were together playing before they made it, it was such a wonderful thing to sit by and listen to them. They had something, obviously. You know, but at the time, as a student, it's very hard to appreciate the fact that it's going to go worldwide. And that, I mean, I think about sitting here now, how many years, 25 years later. Mm-hmm. It is amazing.
You know what else is amazing? People did not believe we were really there. And I'll tell you why. Because it's 1989, and, you know, we'd been talking about it for weeks. We're going to be broadcasting from London. And so people tuned in that first morning, and they were using a brand new satellite technology the engineers had put together that made it sound like we were sitting in the studio in St. Louis. And because it didn't sound like, here we are in London, England, you know, it didn't sound all muffled or something, people just assumed we were making it up because the transmission, the quality of the audio is so good. And people thought we were lying to them about this. Great memories, though. Fantastic memories. Oh, did everybody see Kimmel the other night? And the booming metropolis of O'Fallon, Missouri, was front and center.
And let's get a couple more people, and we'll see who we got.
Oh, another film type.
Hello.
Why did they stop you?
Well, I'm ready to flop. I'm ready to go.
What is your name?
Cassie.
Cassie, where are you from?
I'm from O'Fallon, Missouri.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry. Are you ready to make your parents very ashamed?
I think they'll be very excited.
Oh, they will. Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Well, you just follow Phil right through the door there. And
this knockout chick, this Cassie, she looks like she's probably in her early 20s. Very, very tall. Very, very pretty. Perfect. Absolutely perfect body. And so now it's her turn to do this cannonball belly flop thing.
And next flopper on the board, and that is Cassie. Cassie, you said you were from where again? O'Farrell?
O'Fallon, Missouri.
O'Fallon, Missouri. Well, welcome to the board.
Thank you.
What do you do for work, Cassie?
I am a social media manager for a watch company called Daywatch, and I work at a fashion boutique on Abbot Kinney.
All right. Well, we've heard of Daywatch, Baywatch, and now we have Daywatch. So grab a little red board and let's go. Are you ready to flop?
Let's do the dang thing.
All right. Cassie operating with a disadvantage from a weight standpoint.
3, 2, 1.
Cassie made a big splash in more ways than one. Tied for first place, by the way. And I suspect she'll have an agent by about noon today. I would sign her, let's put it that way. But of course, Kimmel, you know, has ties to Missouri because he married a chick from Eureka. And he pops up in St. Louis every once in a while, and he hates Emo's Pizza. He hates St. Louis-style pizza. But other than that, I don't think Kimmel has any trouble, any problem with anybody else. All right, that's it. We got to cut it here. We're running over time. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Thursday, February 10th, 2022 is in the can. 273 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. Perhaps you've seen it in the papers. There's a football game on Sunday, and so we will commemorate that event with our football show, our big Super Bowl extravaganza. Oops, did I say Super Bowl? I meant big game. Fuck you, it's the Super Bowl. Anyhow, we'll be back with that tomorrow. You may email me at jc@jconline.com, Facebook, the showgram with JC Corcoran. We do politics only when it is unavoidable and help keep us in the top 10% of all podcasts in the country. We publish Monday through Friday right about 7 o'clock, free every day, and we archive everything. You have a great day. Talk to you again tomorrow. In the meantime, we beat this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.